Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Habercost, along with Mason McDonald. And today we're going to be taking a high-level overview look into how to run your business more efficiently, how to get some clarity on the numbers that really matter. So I'm excited for today's show. But before we dive in, Mason, how are things going?
Things are great. It's a busy time of the year. It's the end of February of 2024. So we're seeing a lot of activity in the spring with our real estate business, but in general, it's also tax season. So it's a really timely time to interview our guest today, who is able to provide so many insights into the way that businesses should operate with the financial clarity that every business owner really needs to have. So it's going to be a really fun show today.
Yeah. So today we have David Richter, author of Profit First for Real Estate Investors. And I've heard David on a lot of the biggest real estate podcasts there are, because he's done over 850 deals the last decade, and he now owns Simple Solutions, SimpleCFO.com, which is a consulting firm that comes in to someone like Mason or I's business and helps to get clarity on financials, get clarity on where money's going, and establish clear metrics and KPIs. So really handles all the aspects of business that we often don't like to. And so I'm excited. Let's bring him in, Mason.
Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Habercost, along with Mason McDonald. And we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started.
Ton of experience in the real estate investing world. You've done a lot of deals yourself, which is always really nice to see. But for us and a lot of entrepreneurs, the financial side, the back-end side, keeping P&Ls organized and everything is what we avoid. Could you tell us a little bit about how you kind of found your love for that and made the transition from the COO, CEO-type position into the CFO-type position?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll be very honest with you here. I still don't love it. I own a fractional CFO company, but my background, even though it's yeah, I definitely look like I should have been the accountant bookkeeping person. I am a real estate investor, entrepreneur, and you know, been in the entrepreneur space a long time. But one of the big eye-opening things that made me even go down this road and start a company like this was part of a real estate company where we were doing and scaled it up to about 25 deals a month. But we were spending about 26 worth out the door of deals out the month. So it's like you make a million, spend 1.1 to get there. It's like, that sucks. You know, it's like nothing's going right at that point. So that was a big eye opener. But then I was going to masterminds, you know, communities that are out there. And it was the same thing. They'd be up on stage saying how much they're doing and how much they're making and then crying at the bar later, where did all my cash go? You know, it's like, so that's what got me my eyes open to, okay, it's not just us. And this seems to be a common theme, but we're not really talking about this from the front of the room. Usually it's, you know, you got to get drunk first before we talk about something like this. So that was the first eye-opening experience to this side of the world. Then through a series of events, worked with another investor. His numbers and everything were a mess, and helped him work through that because I had gained that skill of at least knowing where stuff should go on the back end through just like the school of hard knocks and, you know, asking a million questions of CPAs. And he had told me one time, like, hey, just knowing what I'm making, spending, and keeping. Like, just those three simple numbers was life-changing to him. So to me, I was like, I can help people with those three simple numbers. Like, and most people don't know those numbers. What's coming in? What's truly going out? And what's the difference? What do I actually get to keep? So that's where I started Simple CFO and went down this rabbit hole that now has become a much bigger company than I thought, you know, and like has gained a lot more traction than I thought it would at the beginning, because you are very right. Most of us would like rather hit our head against the wall than look at the numbers or look at P&Ls or talk about QuickBooks or anything like that.
I think that your story resonates with so many of us that see an opportunity in the market and just want to go take it and execute on it. And what I mean by that is so much of what Dan and I do is we have these issues and problems in our business. We see everyone else has the same issues and same problems in our business and say, okay, how can we implement something that makes sense for everybody else and solve a bunch of people's problems? Because for me personally, I feel like it's the love of creation and creativity and creating a business rather than the love of the individual deal. And I can tell you now, transitioning from a corporate background into the entrepreneurial world, I was used to having a CFO prepare all of my P&L reports and balance sheets and everything like that. So it was very, very different. But David, so whenever you are going into a new company to start the consulting process, what is maybe the same problem that you see kind of across the board, if you can narrow it down to something specific?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, like you said, the background of, you know, the corporate side, you know, it's like you come to the entrepreneur side, it is the Wild West when it comes to the numbers and the finances and having that type of stuff, because most people don't have access to a CFO type person in their life. So that's why I want to create that. But then from your question specifically, there's a lots of things that shut people down on the financial side. If you want to get real deep, a lot of people just have emotional distress when it comes to money. Money's very emotional. So like people just don't want to think about money. It's the finances. They might suck at it in their personal life. So like business, let's just 10X that and ramp it up, you know, and like now I really don't want to think about it. I'd also say most people build their business when they first start it because of that, you know, kind of mindsets or the money mindsets that might be blocking them on the hope and pray plan. So they build it like, I hope I make enough. I pray there's some left over. You know, like that's what they build their whole business around versus what they really need to bring home. I would also say they don't have a simple system to catch the dollars. You know, a lot of people just go out there. They can learn the make money skill. If they're an entrepreneur, that's usually pretty easy for them. That's kind of something that might come more naturally to them of, okay, I can market, I can close a deal, and I can move on to the next one. So they're really good at making it, but they don't have the keep money skill. So they don't, and if they don't have a system, then it just all goes to like, okay, all the money comes in, money goes right back out the door. So say another big one is most entrepreneurs run their whole financial, you know, life through one big bank account in their business. And we call that the black hole account. Money gets sucked in and sucked out very easily. It's like those are some of the big ones that we see as issues. You know, when we first start working with someone, it's from the emotional distress side to just don't know what the heck they really want out of their business to, okay, since I don't have any of that, I sure don't have a system around it because I don't even know how much I want
to. Well, yeah, that's, I have to laugh, David. It was hearing you on a podcast years ago that got me to go to my bank and create a whole bunch of sub accounts. So I have one for tax budgeting, for next investment property, marketing, so on and so forth. I'll never forget a few years ago having a bigger tax bill than I was expecting. And that was a stressful day because I hadn't set up that system. I wasn't budgeting accordingly. So thank you for that. Follow-up question, diving a little bit deeper, I do wonder how often are you running into people that really, they just don't have a good business and it's their margins aren't good enough? Or is it more often than not simply bad budgeting? Or what do you tend to find?
The bad business doesn't spring up as much as you think it would. It's usually not. That's not the root issue, because even if you have, I feel like in today's economy and today's open access to everyone on planet Earth, if you have even half an idea, if you can get it out there in front of people, you're going to be able to sell stuff, you know, and like be able to have the trade of value there. What I see more is the two big things. It's number one, they just run out of cash. You know, that's still the number one reason why businesses close is they run out of cash, you know, according to the SBA. But then the other thing too is I would say the leadership, the leader and the owner really stepping up to the plate to become what he or she needs to be, whether that is I need to learn something about the finances or at least get someone in my life that does, or I need to start building a team. And instead of hiring the right people, it's hiring the warmest body, you know, the warm body that comes through the door. And it's like, okay, let's just do this, you know, together. And it's like, they don't have any plan around that. I would say it's more around the owner's capacity to grow and to really become who they need to be and what their business needs to be is the ultimate reason for where we see a lot of people fail. I would say we work a lot in the real estate investing sector. And even with the real estate going up and down, some of our clients do great in these horrible interest rate times, you know, like when We've been so used to 2-4%, and now it's like, you know, 5-9% in some places. And it's like, okay, some people have really, you know, they've thrived in that market and some people have not. And a lot of it comes down to is the owner asking themselves the right questions? And that's one of the things that money and the numbers can really help you with, is pinpointing what's really wrong. So yes, a big portion of it is knowing where the money's going, but it's also the owner being able to take that action too. And sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's hard to be like, I built this business and I might have to lay some people off because I grew too much and now the economy's hurting and I don't want to lay someone off. Maybe I'll just pull money from somewhere and then they go bankrupt and it's like, oh man, that didn't help anyone. So I would say those are a couple of the other reasons besides just the budget.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there, but there's one question, something that I personally struggle with, and so I know that this is common. And so, you know, Mason and I have our own KPIs that we and lead measures that we track each other on and hold each other accountable to. And something I always struggle with, especially when you're not at a huge scale, is what's the appropriate amount of time to look at a metric? And so, easy example, a lot of our business is around direct-to-seller marketing via mail. And can you really get a true average in 1 month over several markets if you're only sending 10,000 mailers? You know, and so when you establish these financial metrics with your clients, and especially in real estate where it can be so up and down, is 1 month really useful, or is it by quarter, or do you change it depending on how large the company? You know, how do you think about getting a real average, a real regression to the mean, and accurate numbers?
Yeah. Well, first, we like to see a year's worth of data if you have it. If you're old enough as a company to have 1 or 2 years worth of data, it's good to see the trend across, you know, that time period. But then, even then, if the market is changing rapidly, the quarterly, you know, change up and see, okay, is this, how did we do over this quarter for this marketing campaign? And that's even if you're going into the future and you have no idea what's going to happen, it's a quarter is a good judge of it because it usually gives it enough time to have enough data points. Unless you're just doing, you know, 100 mailers at a time, you're probably not going to have a ton of, you know, data, even if you sit there for 90 days. So obviously it scale does matter for a lot of that. But if you're running 10,000 mailers a month and you have 3 months worth, that's going to give you a pretty good, okay, the first month was 0.01 open rate, you know, and like a 0.001 response rate and that they actually called or whatever it might be. It's like, okay, what is that over these 3 months? So that's what we usually like to see with people. During COVID though, okay, 2020, it was like, you know, what was that? That was like 1 week at a time almost. Like, how was it week to week? And like, what did you close last week? What do you have closing this next week? Because we have no idea what's going to happen. It's something that no one ever saw on their forecast schedule. You know, like you can see like, okay, the economy might be going up and down and like, how do we pivot if the market does go down? But that changed like overnight, you know, like with not the whole world and it was affecting us differently. So that was like, it depends also on where you are in the marketplace and the market cycle. But I would say 90 days is a good one. I like to see also 12-month trailing. What have you done? And like, is the last 6 months closer to what you're really on track to do now versus the even previous 6 months to that? So really looking at that and seeing how much data we have and what can we base it on.
I want to spend a lot of time kind of breaking down some of the things you said, but I think it'd be useful just looking on your website at the client life cycle, a 5-step process, because, and then taking what you said there and kind of matching it up with these different levels, because it starts with step one, assess and match. And I think that what people neglect to realize whenever they're in this entrepreneurial world, because they might not have this position on salary or within their actual organization, is the CFO. They're a part of your leadership team. And you were talking about at the beginning of assessing the owner and assessing the leader and everything like that. So whenever you're going into a business, obviously you can look at the data, you can look at kind of what the business model is and everything like that. But how do you assess? So two questions. How do you assess the current owner or operator or CEO or COO of an organization that you've decided to do consulting with? And then how do you determine your best match CFO? And yeah, take it and run with that one.
Yeah. Usually it's two big things. Number one, what industry are they in? And like, especially in real estate, what niche are they in? So that way we can match up with the best CFO. But then the personality too. Is this a type A, B, C, D, you know, and like what type of CFO do they need on the back end who's going to match them? Because like you said, this person is a part of their leadership team. I can't have an A-type entrepreneur that's going to steamroll a CFO. The steamrolling usually needs to come from the financial person, you know, of like, here's what's really happening. And if you don't make a different decision, this could end up in bankruptcy, you know, or like this could end up in like you're not eating for a month, you know, like before you get back on track. So it's like making sure that the personalities match, but then also the industry as well. So that way they have, you know, good experience for, okay, what have other people gone through in the same industry as well?
And on that, and in addition to that, how much work are you doing related to looking at this person, looking at this operator and being like, dude, you're not in the right position in your organization. You are better suited to take a step back and let someone else go in. Do you offer insights like that, or are you more focused on bringing in a CFO and determining, okay, do we need, what personality do we need? Do we need a more operational focused CFO? Do we need a CFO that's looking, that's really strong accounting, really strong in financing and forecasting? Or how do you kind of gently offer the advice of coming in and being like, okay, I see what the problem is. It's not the business model. It's this CEO right here.
Sure. I would say because my avatar is people that make money but feel broke, people come to us because they have issues, whether it be I don't have the time in my business, or, you know, like I'm spending too much time elsewhere, or I'm not making any money myself, or I have no idea what's really going on. Like, usually there's a pain point that we have to solve immediately. So it's like, what's this? What will this solve right now? And then that gives the CFO insight to be like, okay, let's dive into this. Is this an owner issue, or is this more of like, okay, bad decisions have piled up and we just need to take a step back there? Because usually just within two calls, we're not like, ooh, this is just a crazy owner. If it's a crazy owner, usually we don't want to even work with them. Like if they're if we know this is going to be someone who's not coachable, who isn't willing to dive in and talk about the hard things, like some of that can rear its ugly head right at the very beginning when we're discovering if we're a good fit or not. But then if we dive in and then those conversations have to come up, that's what the CFO should be there to do. Like, hey, some of the things are not just because he hired the wrong person. It's because of the thought process behind hiring is broken, you know? So because everything touches the finances, right? Every decision touches the finances, from operations, marketing, sales, like the whole thing. So sometimes we have to reach across and be like, okay, show me this process. How do you get a lead in the door? Because is that a broken process, or is it you as the owner are stepping on the rug of the person you hired, you know, like to do this, and you're micromanaging them and you keep have turnover in that one seat and you wonder why you don't have any time yourself?
No, I think that's great. And I feel like I have a decent idea of kind of how you guys come in at the beginning. And you mentioned, you know, the kind of the quick win things. Yeah. And I understand that from being a consultant background, and just when consultants come into these larger organizations, of you want to assess and define what the problem is first before you start making recommendations and everything like that. But I imagine there's a pretty consistent, like, quick win. Here's something we can do right now, right away, that's going to make you feel really good about the decision of hiring us. Do you have any of those quick wins that you kind of see across the board?
That's why I like Profit First so much, because that usually resonates with the owner. How can we get you to know what is coming in, going out, even if your books suck? You know, because like bookkeeping cleanup is not always a quick win. You know, it's like they came to us with years worth of garbage. You know, it's like, okay, but knowing where your money's going and seeing, can you get paid more? Are you really on track? What really is the monthly outflow of your company? Or usually around the cash is the quick win. Because that's really, honestly, at the end of the day, what most owners care about anyway is, what am I really doing? Am I going to be able to stay in business or not? Am I really on track? Can I start paying myself more? Some of the money roadblocks there, usually that's one of the big wins, you know, coming in to be able to say, okay, how are you feeling cash-wise? Oh, let's correct that and assess where you've been cash-wise in the past.
That makes sense. Okay, so you've onboarded, you've screened the client before starting with them. You've helped them get financial clarity, you know, establish those simple metrics. And I see here for 4 and 5, financial freedom and financial mastery. So can you speak more to what that involves and what all you all do in that section of the 5 phases?
Oh, sure. Financial freedom to me is more like, okay, now it is, we've gotten through your pain points of the finances, and it's more the holistic point of, okay, are there other areas of your business that are stopping you from really attaining your true financial freedom? Like, it might not be the money that's stopping you. It's you don't have the right people in place, or you don't have the right processes, or you're doing too much. You know, like, why don't you have an assistant going through your emails at this point? You know, it's like things like that where it makes an immediate impact on like the business owner's day to day. And now since they have a clear picture on the money, they don't feel as bad spending the money if they need to offload something that they have on their plate that they can now hire someone to get. So it's like that freedom is really that money and time freedom, because once they have the clarity, they can see the money freedom, but it's getting them to cross the time freedom portion. Then the mastery is more the people that want to take it to the next level, whether it's like, hey, do we want to do the infinite banking concept and like go through that? You know, that's a whole thing of itself in its own podcast, you know, episode. But like, do I want to be as efficient with my cash as possible? Do I want to become my own bank? Do I want to start private lending to other investors? You know, like, do I want to now have my business make money just like, you know, like an investor does, have their money make money? What about the business too? Because some people come in, you've got one guy that's been with us, like, I don't know, I just looked at this, 36 months. So 3 years, that's 3 years, right? Yeah. So 3 years. And like, he's been running this system for a while and he's stacked cash. So like his conversations now are, where do I put the excess funds? Because now I've known where it is and I've had good habits and I've stacked the money. It's like, where do I get a better return than just, you know, even the 4 to 5% you can get in a bank account now, you know, in some savings accounts, where do I put it out there in the marketplace and what connections can we make? That's more of the connections and other things.
I'm glad we hit on this because you're making a really important distinction that is so often not made on podcasts. And so it's easy in our business where people say land investing. We are not investing. It's a simple arbitrage business to make money. When we go and buy rental properties, that's investing. And these are two totally different things with totally different objectives. And so that's really interesting. I didn't realize that you all not only helped get clarity on the books and control the ins and outs every month and establish KPIs, but then help with the investing side of things. So that's pretty interesting. Are you helping all the way through setting something up like infinite banking, or helping someone establish then a rental portfolio? Or I mean, how deep does that go?
Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com.
It would be more, we have those relationships. So it's like, because I don't want the CFO to be all things to them. I want the CFO to be the CFO. So if it's like, hey, we're ready for this, here's the person on our team that we have, or the connection that we have that we trust, that have worked with, you know, like myself or other people on our team that we want to connect them to. But I'm a very much focused, you know, like owner, like this is the focus of the CFO. And if like, this is what you're needing, we have either that connection or that person, that partnership that we've cultivated. Because yeah, I don't want that CFO to be the investment advisor too, you know, like going out and doing that. Now, as far as a rental portfolio, if the CFO says, hey, you bought a rental, let me analyze it to make sure it's cash flowing, that's something they can do, you know. But if it's like, hey, I want to start buying rentals, okay, who do I know in this marketplace? What type of return are you wanting? Are you wanting to buy turnkey, or are you wanting to buy it, you know, a fixer upper, you know, and like that you go into and have boots on the ground in that place? So
I appreciate that approach too, because you want your CFO to be very specialized in accounting and financing and managing the books and having it all compliant. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a tax strategist or a rental property strategist and everything like that.
Right.
But backing up just a little bit, and then I want to kind of dive back into this, the specificity within the CFO role. With the KPIs and metrics that you are setting up in an organization, how much of them are beyond the typical financial metrics? I look at metrics in two ways. I either look at operational metrics or financial metrics. Financial metrics being anything from days cash on hand and everything that you'll see on a P&L and a balance sheet, as versus some of the stuff that Dan brought up at the beginning of,
yeah,
you know, cost per, or, you know, mailings per deal and that sort of thing.
Yeah. That's where we've actually built a dashboard that we connect to our clients' QuickBooks accounts. So that way we can pull, and the operations director created this because I had a simple one when I had, you know, way back when, and it was more of what you were talking about, the simple numbers of like what they want, of what, you know, like a typical financial person, what you might think of. This one now has a lot more to it, but it's like, okay, what does the owner need? Because there's like 20 hidden tabs. And then there's the forward facing ones that are like, here's the typical things, your projections, your cash flow, you know, the cash flow management piece. Profit First is on there too. So that's how we manage that. And that's how the reports are a little bit different, since we have, you know, Profit First obviously as a foundational piece. But then there's other things that we go through, like, okay, what is your break-even point? What is the 90-day, you know, like if you're running rehabs, we've got certain tabs for that. If you're running the wholesale, if you're running rentals, here's how we analyze those. So it's, some of them are also specific to the area of investing that you're in too. So it's like having some numbers that are more, you know, for that versus just the general business. But we have the basic ones that a lot of people have, like what you were talking about, the P&L, the balance sheet, the forecasting, you know, the looking backwards as well too. But then we also have specific niche, you know, ones as well that we go into. Then the Profit First, and then the Profit First for the different niches too, you know, inside of real estate. So it's like, it can get very granular on that part, but it's like, what does the owner really need to see here? And a lot of it is for us to see what's on track, off track. It's like for the CFO to be like, let me pull this up and see on this next meeting, I really need to bring X up, you know, to this owner, because this is way off track, or I see this heading downhill very quickly. And then there's obviously the ones that the client can see, but they're more the simple, pretty one, you know, to make sure they understand.
I love what you're talking about here in terms of, I think a lot of executives have the desire to just be dashboard managers of, and I don't mean that in that's their job, but being able to look at a very simple Tableau, Microsoft Power BI, business intelligence related dashboard that says, these are the 3 to 10 metrics that I really, really, really care about. I don't need to sift through all this other stuff. Now, with that being said, in real estate investing, there's 457 billion different CRMs and tools and softwares and everything like that. How much within the role of the fractional CFO or within the services of your company is integrating all of these current softwares that they're using, you know, beyond QuickBooks and everything, but we use Pebble as a CRM and PropStream as a data pulling source and all these various things. How much integration goes into that as versus, okay, we're going to have this really, really clean and then you guys worry about that.
Right. That's where, if we're going to do like a marketing study or something, like to see what are your returns on investments, then we have to be integrated into the other one, or we at least have to have someone on your team pull the numbers we're looking for. How many leads came in? What marketing channel were they from? You know, like, do you have some of this in place? And if not, then you need a CRM that breaks it down, you know, by the campaign and by the phone number or whatever, because then we like to tie it to the actual numbers. Because a lot of people try and do that in their CRM of like, here's what I think I spent on this campaign versus how much came in. And it's like, well, no, we should be tying it to what you actually spent, you know, like what actually went out the door. So that's where what we really like to see, like we said, the focus of the financial end, but sometimes we have to pull pieces from those other sources because that's where, you know, the lead metric lives instead of the lag metric. You know, like it's something on the front end versus the back end, like, hey, a lead came in. If it went the distance, what did we spend and what did we actually make from that? So it really depends on where they are, you know, like their entrepreneurial journey and which softwares they have. But a lot of times we have to at least get the data somehow from those systems.
Got it. Okay. No, that makes sense. And yeah, that's been a challenge. Pebble has been great for certain things, but not so great for tracking mailers and what comes out of them and everything involved there. But that's another conversation. So David, I've been bookmarking something you said from earlier in the conversation that is a little more abstract, but I think really important to bring up because this applied to me and I think many others. You said a lot of people have strong emotional reactions when talking about money. And for me, for a very long time, it was fear. I remember being a kid and 6-year-old me was worried about money, hearing my parents talk about it. Is there going to be enough? Is it running out in such a scarcity? And so I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Are there some common issues you run into with your consulting clients where maybe it's something like what I just described, where there's fear and then they're making bad decisions? I know for me, I was so stingy on marketing because in my mind, it scared me to spend money for a long time and that held me back. Anything you want to say there?
Oh yeah. Number one issue with money is fear, for sure. That's the number one emotion around it. Number two, I would say is shame. Because a lot of people come in and they're ashamed that they don't know more than they do about money. They think I'm a business owner, so shouldn't I know the basics of like how to read a profit and loss, how to read a balance sheet, you know, that type of thing. Okay, I'll be, so here's how green I was back in the day when I was in that real estate company, I thought P&L was P&L. Like, what's the N stand for? You know, I'm like, what the heck? And you know, it's like, I had some humbling moments at the beginning. So it's like, I totally get where people are coming from, where they're like, I have no idea what's going on. So I would say fear, shame, and fear takes its ugly head in a couple different ways. One, it could be the fear of, I'm afraid to spend money because of stuff like that in the past, whether it was parents or just, you know, movies that I watched or whatever it was. Like, I don't want to run out of money, and I don't, you know, the scarcity mentality. There's also the fear on the other end. If I don't spend all my money, I'm not a good business owner. If I don't reinvest every dollar into my business, then I'm not financially responsible, which that's the opposite of financial responsibility. But it's like, that's what's kind of, that's almost the cool thing to do. It's almost like that. Isn't that what most people do out in the marketplace, right? You know, like, I'm just reinvesting. We all love that word. So I feel like that fear drives people two different ways. I need to spend the money to be financially responsible, or I just don't ever spend it because I'm scared to spend it because I think it's going to run out. So I think fear, and then that shame is another big one that a lot of people come in with, that they just, they think they should be smarter than they are. But I tell people all the time, like, that knowledge gap, like, to be, to go from, I know nothing, I think it's P&L, to I can actually have cash in my bank account that's paying, you know, that's for me, is such a smaller gap than we really realize. But most people, their interaction with financial people before, or like what they think they should know, they think they have to be business owner who doesn't know anything to CFO almost, or to, like, you know, controller or CPA or even bookkeeper. You know, like, they think that, oh, they're super smart, they know what's going on. And it's like, no, there's things that you should know as the owner that make you a business owner. Like, what we're talking about versus investor, even, like, this is what makes me a business owner, and this mindset, this mentality, and the things I need to know versus, okay, I need to know how to book a HUD and where every single piece of it goes into QuickBooks. It's like, no, that's not what makes you a business owner. You being a business owner is, what do these numbers mean, and how do I make sure more money comes in and not too much goes out? So it's like, it's a very small, I want to help people with that. That's why I wrote the book too. That was another big reason for writing Profit First for Real Estate Investing, because that's where Profit First really resonated with me. Like, you could just set up some very simple systems up front that will help you as the owner at least not run out of cash, or know, or have a better system for your cash management. But I would say those are the big things when it comes to money that people come in with, that fear, that shame, and then the kind of two different paths people take, the extremes that a lot of people just don't know that there's actual middle ground.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's so opposite of me. I could see by your frustration, you clearly deal with that a lot, where people feel they need to reinvest every single dollar, which often becomes frivolous. And all that to say, it seems that much of what you're probably hardest part of your job is navigating emotions and ego, which is interesting. But anyways.
Yeah, well, and kind of 100%. Along the psychology, and, you know, answer with whatever level you can. And this is kind of on the business and your customers, where a lot of our audience, while they are real estate investors, a lot of them are business owners or from the corporate background, high-level corporate folks. Whenever you are taking on a customer and you provide this clarity into their businesses, and I know what it's like having a CFO where it's the CEO is always like, yes, 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 yes. The CFO is no, please stop. No, 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 no. Whenever you take on these customers, you provide this clarity and you give them a true financial picture of their organization. How often, if ever, are your customers like, you know what, David, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't like what you guys are offering. You are telling me my business is not as profitable as I know it is. Get out of here. And does that ever come into play? And how do you navigate it, if so?
Once they have clarity, that's never come up, because even if it's bad, like if this is such a great question. If they've taken the hard work is looking at it. That's the hard part. I've never had someone who said, I want to be honest with myself, no matter how bad it is, and look at it, then walk away and say, no, I don't want to know anymore. Because then they're like, okay, what do I do now? Because once you have that power in your hand to say, this is where it is, no matter how bad the story is, that's usually the point where it can be turned around, is once we know and have that information. That's where, no, like, anyone who goes that far into it, does not stop and say, okay, I don't want to know anymore. It's like, no, now what do I do? That's when they really know. Absolutely. I really need this help.
I think what people need to hear from that is there's a lot of personalities in this world, and there's a lot of people that would have that reaction if they gotten to that point. But I think it goes into the beginning of whenever you are having that two-way interview with your potential clients and saying, all right, you're not a good fit for us. You are a good fit for us, because those people that aren't a good fit can hear it and be like, hey, Mason, you spent $1,400 at Crumble Cookies last month. What is wrong with you? You've got issues. And I would say, no, I don't have issues. I don't have a problem or anything. But April of 2020, it was bad. Crumble just like came, the delivering pandemic. And I could go down that rabbit hole for a long time.
Right.
But
well, that was one of our first clients. I tell this story in the book where he was like, and that was when I was back doing it with, you know, with the first, he was one of our first five clients ever. And I showed him the numbers on a Zoom call and he hung up on me, you know, like he just was like, okay, bye. You know, it's like, and I'm like, does this mean it's done? It's over. Like he doesn't want to move forward. He called me later and apologized. He was just embarrassed. He was embarrassed with how bad it was and said, okay, did you have, what else did you have on that Zoom call? You know, like, did you have a plan or something? And it was like, yes, here's the plan, like how we can get out of this and turn it around. But he was just embarrassed and ashamed, you know, at that point. And that's where, I could, it's lots of stories, but he was one of the very first ones back in the day. So I'm like, we run into that stuff.
Yeah, it's, people are complicated. Business is complicated. And that's something that I feel like a lot of us feel whenever we're in that solo entrepreneur role where this is my money. Yeah. It's not corporate America's money. It's not the shareholders' money. It's my money. So there's even more emotion tied to it than I feel like a lot of other places. But
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
You are the biggest. It's
just us. Just me and my wife, or anything like that. And so I think it's fascinating, the psychology of it and how much fear and everything is associated with. At the end of the day, it's just numbers. It's just numbers, and it's just part of doing business. But David, where do you kind of see? Or Dan, I'll let you jump in. I know you had a question at the tip of your tongue.
You know, I just wanted to comment on that. So that you just said it's just numbers, and this is something that has taken me years and years. I want to say this because I know there's other people like me that come from a scarcity mindset and are scared to spend money, is working to gamify it in my head. And I remember hearing Hormozy say this on a podcast a long time ago, and I didn't get it. I'm thinking, this is serious. This is money. What do you mean gamify it? But years later, I understand, and it's kind of like Mason and I always joking that I would be better at running his business and he would be better at running my business because it's less emotional. And so when I logged into my bank account earlier today, looking at all my different accounts with Chase, and I've gotten much better at just thinking about it as no different than a video game I played as a kid. And what do you know? I'm able to think far more rationally, make better decisions. So I feel like I'm not saying this quite as clearly as I intend to, but being able to gamify it to some degree in your head, I think really helps take those emotions out of it so you can make better decisions.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a part of the system too. It's like, it's built on the envelope method, and it's like, you are gamifying it. It's like, I'm giving every dollar a name, and do I have enough dollars that really make a difference in my life? You know, like, if you're the biggest shareholder and you're going to be emotional with it, does it make sense? Like, why did I start this company? And am I getting closer to, you know, level one being done? You know, like, am I going to beat this level or not? And like, so that way I can, because then you can ask yourself, do I want to go to level two? If the different levels are the different scaling and like how big your company gets, you get to the end of level one where you're like, I'm putting a couple $100,000 in my pocket. I don't really have a big team at all. Do I want to go to that next level? You know, and like, now I'm going to have to start from square one. Now it's like two, you know, 2-1. You know, and I'm going through there, and it's like, okay, am I going to have to, you know, what am I going to have to learn on this journey, and how is this going, am I going to have to take some of those steps back? It's going to get harder. You know, like the boss fight at the end of level two is going to be harder than the end of level one. So it's like, what do I have to reach there? So yes, it's like being able to think of it like that, with that is, it's, it helps to ease the entrepreneur's mindset too of, okay, I'm doing this because I'm going to give myself the option. Am I really going to go out there and like want to level up, or do I want to stay smaller but be able to be very profitable? And this is now, you know, and it also depends on your stage of life and your situation. Do you have small kids at home? Maybe scaling up isn't the best thing to do right now. You know, like, do you not? Are you not? Do you not have kids at home? Do you not have, you know, spouse, are you out there, you know, and you're able to just go crazy and spend 80 hours a week, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, it's like the where you're able to do that. So it's like, it also depends on where you are in your stage of life too, but that's a great way of putting it. If you gamify it, it just helps you to see, okay, once I reach this certain level, do I want to go to that next level?
I think the way that we're describing this and what we're really talking about is clarity makes things known, and it's a fear of unknown that leads to the irrational decision making. Because today, for instance, I was complaining to Dan right before you got on, David, of God, I had to do all my first half property tax payments on all my land that I owned in Colorado, and it was $9,000, and it's fine, it sucks. But it's the idea of if you know that you've been allocating for taxes and that you have a separate account where it's coming from and you're projecting it out and you know, then it's done. Yeah, it sucks and it can be painful, but it's not scary because it's, you know, and I'll do another anecdote to my parents. My parents are building in rural Colorado right now. They're building their retirement home. It has been a nightmare of a process, trying to find contractors to do the labor, trying to get all this stuff done. And finally, they fired their old contractor. They went with the biggest person in town that was able to give them a really accurate number. And it was about $300,000 higher than they budgeted and expected. And I said, that sucks. That's horrible. Yeah, you're going to have to take out a little bit of a mortgage on it. But now you know the only thing you have to worry about is making a little bit more money as versus, is it ever going to get finished? Is it ever going to get built? The human brain is only capable of focusing on a few things at a time, and you can't be fighting a battle on two fronts. So at least if you have clarity with your numbers, which is what David's company can give you, then you can focus your time, effort, energy on what actually matters, which is making more money and using the rare and valuable skills that you have developed over the past 1, 5, 10, 20 years to go make more money and then have it allocated in the way that it is. But yeah, this kind of stuff gets me really excited, and it's listen to our advice. Don't copy what Dan and I do, because we could probably do a lot better in it. But David, where do you see yourself and your company going? Where are you now and where do you see yourself going?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's taken off, like I said, a lot faster than I thought, just because it's resonated. You know, I rang that bell in the marketplace and people are like, holy crud. Like, yeah, I need this, because a lot of people have that, those money thoughts. So we have about 35-ish, 40 CFOs on the team. Working with about 150 clients on a monthly basis. Like, it's taken off. So we just want to keep growing, want to grow the team, because we could see just the impact that we're making and want to continue growing there. So this year, you know, adding about 100 more clients to the client base, you know, adding more CFOs as well too, and just really, really helping more people, because we can see this as something that has made a huge impact on the owners that we work
with. Yeah. Wow. 100 more clients. That's quite the operation you have there. I'm sure we could have a whole topic or a whole conversation just on your internal processes. But something I wanted to ask, all this to say, so your business, your active business is doing quite well, you're growing. I'm curious what you're doing on the investment side.
People ask this all the time because of my background. I sold everything I had to pour into this, and I have not bought another real estate property since I started this because of what you just said, focus. I think I have a little bit of fear, because the first company where we were doing 25 deals a month, we did a lot of different exit strategies too, wholesale, turnkey, fix and flip, lease options, rentals, you know, like, and that to me, we were so spread out. We went very wide and not deep. I'm like, I'm not doing that. If I start my own thing, I'm never doing that. So I'm like, I've gone very deep here. I think that's another thing that's helped us have a very solid foundation, be able to grow like we have without internally imploding. And then from here, just being very picky and being very passive investments, whether it be private lending or things like that, because that's some of the stuff that I still do. I might not buy properties, but I don't mind lending the money out, you know, and being on a deal with the people that I trust, and doing that type of thing and learning the different concepts there and using my self-directed IRA, you know, and using the infinite banking and the policies and, you know, doing that type of thing. But at this point, nothing that's going to take my focus away from this business and making sure that this is firing on all cylinders and really, really growing and helping and not exploding. Because how many businesses have you seen out there? They lose sight of the of what's really helping or what's really making an impact. And then, they, you know, you don't see them a year later in that same business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wish someone had said what you just talked about to me years ago about focus. And so similarly, I've moved just to focus on the land business intensely, and then the investing just to be nice buildings that are very passive, you know, younger than me, B plus A areas, that sort of thing, new construction. And then you don't ever really hear from the tenants. So anyways, David, this has been a fun conversation. It's been different than a lot of the others we've had. Are there any questions we didn't ask that you think we should have, or anything you'd like to say on any of the topics we've gone over?
If I just had to leave you with one last piece of advice here, is like I said, the knowledge gap is a lot shorter. If you're in the real estate world, you can read Profit First for real estate investing. If you're outside the real estate world, read one of the other Profit First books. There's the original one by Mike Michalowicz, or if you're like in, you know, the construction industry, there's one for contractors. You know, it's like there's different ones for different niches too. That's a great place to start. Because even if you feel overwhelmed, there's just certain steps you can take in there that you can take them in bite-sized chunks, like being able to set up a bank account. I think most people, if you're listening to this, have the capability to go out and set up another bank account. So it's like you can take it in bite-sized chunks, take it at your pace, make it simple and not complicated. Don't take everything you hear as gospel. Say, okay, how does this apply to me and where can I apply it to where I am right now? Then I would also say to focus. Like, make sure you are focused, because that's why so many people lose out and like really don't get to where they want to be, is because we're so addicted to starting something but not finishing it as entrepreneurs, and getting that shiny object syndrome. And I would say it goes with the money too, because when you know, okay, I've made a lot of money, where did it all go? That's when a lot of fork in the road is, I can either go deeper and maybe take a step back and go slow right now to get a little bit faster, you know, smooth is fast. You know, and it's like making sure that the operation is actually smooth and I know what's going on and I can run the business by the numbers. But start at least reading something like that, whether, like I said, whether it's my book or the original Profit First or one of the other ones, that was at least digestible to me and to other entrepreneurs and giving you first steps of where you should go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good synopsis there, guys. You heard it here. David Richter with Profit First for Real Estate Investors. And that's SimpleCFOSolutions.com. If anyone...
We actually have an updated site now. Don't go to the solutions one. It's SimpleCFO.com. Even though my email has solutions still, I can't figure out how to just shorten it. But it's like SimpleCFO.com. If you don't mind,
please.
People, the ebook too, if you're good with that, and Proffer Cheat Sheet. If you go to SimpleCFO.com/gift, you can go there, download the book, and then you can schedule a call with us. If you're making money but feeling broke, you can at least get on a call. We'll point you in the right direction, but that'll give you at least the first steps. Like, if you're on your first deal, I was literally talking to one of the guys that was the inspiration of all of this today. And he had told me years ago on the podcast, if I would have started this 5 years ago, like Profit First, I would have had like $5 million more in my account. And I'm like, okay, like, I wish people would just start the good habits from the very beginning. So simplecfo.com/gift, at least get the first steps.
Yeah, we really appreciate your generosity with your time and the information, and listen to what David's saying. Go check out the website. Go see what he's doing. It makes sense for all of us that need things to be compartmentalized and need clarity to move our businesses in the right direction. But David, it's been fantastic and a pleasure to have you on the show. This is Mason McDonald and Dan Habercost with the Big Picture Blueprint signing off. And that's it for today's episode of the Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.